Hey everyone, it's Dan Hyun with the Ethnos Conference in Baltimore, and our goal has been to equip the church in justice, reconciliation, and mission. And like much of the world last year, things got shut down because of pandemic, and unfortunately we had to cancel our conference. We are looking forward to where God leads us in the future, but for now, we are having the special Ethnos conversation, Black and Asian Together. And where this came out of is, typically when we talk about the issue of race in the church in America, it's often a black and white conversation, which is needed, but we also feel this is an opportunity to shed some light on a facet that might not always be talked about in every corner of the church world. We're also excited about this because we have some amazing participants, including Jenny Yang, who is the Vice President of Advocacy and Policy at World Relief, George Hopkins, who is the pastor of Sowebo Community Church in Southwest Baltimore, and Larry Lynn, who is moderating as he helps to lead the Village Church. So this is a really great opportunity to highlight our city as well. One of the things I love about all three of these is they are amazing champions for justice in our own city of Baltimore. And part of my desire through Ethnos is to be able to equip the larger world through what's coming out of our own city. So we want to invite you to be educated, informed through this time, but more than just those things, to also ask the Holy Spirit to probe us and to lead us into deeper areas of growing more into his image. And please feel free to share this with others. We would love to get this out to as many people as possible as we help the church to move forward in these things. So sit back and let's invite the Holy Spirit in this time.
Well, welcome everyone to our virtual Ethnos conversation, Black and Asian Together. We're really excited to have this opportunity with our guests, Jenny Yang and Pastor George Hopkins. With us today, we'll be having a really important conversation in light of a lot of recent events going on in our country, just talking about Black and Asian relations and the whole gamut. So I'll introduce myself a little bit, and then I'll give our guests an opportunity to do the same, and then we'll jump right in. So my name is Larry Lynn, and I'm a pastor at Village Church Hamden. That's the building where we're meeting right now. And we'll just start off with Jenny. Why don't you say a little bit about yourself? And in particular, it would be great if both of you can share a bit about your journey in regard to combating racism and championing reconciliation.
Sure. Thanks so much. So it's an honor for me to be with you, George, and Larry, to have this conversation, and a really timely one at that, I think. So my name is Jenny Yang, and I live in Elkridge, Maryland, which is right outside of Baltimore. I'm originally from Philly, so I'm a Philly girl at heart, but I've been living in Baltimore for the past 20 years or so. And so I am actually the mother of two young kids. One is five and one is two. They're both boys. And so my personal journey on the conversation of race and reconciliation generally, it really is born out of who I am, because I am the daughter of immigrants, and that identity has really shaped me from when I was a young girl. So when I was born in Philadelphia, my dad had a small business in downtown Philly. He was a mechanic, so he would repair cars all the time. But my parents didn't speak English that well, and we knew that we were a small community, a Korean community in the outskirts of Philly, and it was the church that we grew up in that really helped us with social support as we were, you know, my parents were trying to struggle through making it in this country. But I always remember looking different than everyone else, of speaking a different language than everyone else, of eating different foods than everyone else. And I think that feeling of being an outsider always formulated my identity. And I think it was out of that kind of struggle of what it means to be a hyphenated American, a Korean American, really shaped my outlook in life. It shaped my faith. It shaped what I do and my work. It shaped my relationship with my community, the way I raise my children. And so I think being the daughter of immigrants has been foundational for me. And so I think being in an immigrant family, it automatically makes you aware of race, of the dynamics of people that are different, that are culturally different, and how that plays out in so many conversations around, you know, immigration and education and just social systemic injustice and all of those things. And so I think it's really from that position that I started, exploring more. What does it look like for me as a Christian to be involved in these conversations? And so I've spent many years, over 15 years, working at an organization called World Relief, where we are a Christian humanitarian relief and development organization. So I our leader public policy work there, but a lot of that is formed out of my own personal experience and my positioning on this issue. And I can talk about that more a little bit later, but I've had various experiences being abroad, but I think foundational for me has been being raised in an immigrant home and how that really shaped my understanding of race in this country today.
Thank you, Jenny. Again, my name is Pastor George Hopkins, and for me, it's personal, too. Growing up in South Baltimore in a community that was predominantly African-American, pastoring at some point in my life in a suburb that was predominantly white, and realizing that there was so much disparity in the differences of where I grew up and in where I was serving, with access to resources, with investment in those communities. But also, I would say, part of first of me appreciating other cultures and racial reconciliation was realizing that there were other traditions, other ways of worship, and other ways of knowing God, and other kinds of food that I was missing out on because I was isolated in my own culture. That was the expansion part that I would say gave me a heart to understand more other groups. And then it was the part that I realized was very hurtful, which was how racism was not only divisive, but it was oppressive, and that it could shorten somebody's lifespan and it could lock them away from opportunities. And I would look at the scriptures and see God's heart was not ever intended for that. And I long and desire to see a glimpse of God's kingdom for all people here on earth in our present day.
That's awesome. It's great to hear about your stories and just your journey through experiencing racism, witnessing racism, and then now being a champion of anti-racism causes. A lot of the racism in America is often rightly addressing the product of the issue of white supremacy. Oftentimes, you know, Asians talk about whether it's historic or current racism towards Asians, and then blacks often talk about historic or current racism from whites to blacks and so on. But recent events have also exposed some of the conflicts between black and Asian communities. And sometimes this doesn't get as much media attention, but I think it's worth highlighting. In what ways have blacks and Asians in America demonstrated racism toward one another? And why do you think there is so much racial tension between the two ethnic groups? What would you say?
I smile because that's a loaded question, Larry.
Yes.
But I'll give some thoughts. You know, I think you use the words white supremacy, and I know that some people have discomfort with those words. And there's been some efforts to find better words. But I like using those words because those are the words that were used and written in the documents of generations before us that would validate why we would treat another people group differently, was that the idea that there was a people group who were white that were more supreme. I think what you do is white supremacy says that whiteness would be at the top of that supremacy or at the top of that scale or ladder, and then you would have everybody else fall in order. More often than not, the darkest person or people would be at the bottom of that scale. Isabel Wilkerson wrote a great book called Caste, I think gives a lot of insight into that. And so I think you have to include that in the conversation, because many times when you have any level of competition against other people groups, it is still on that scale of white being the supreme and dark being the least desired. You can see that some in the black community. I'm a dark-skinned male, and I could tell a lot more stories of what it meant for me to be dark-skinned and someone else to be lighter brown or light-skinned. And I think you see that then towards Asian-American community, African-Americans. We are competing in this false scale that has white supremacy being the center and end goal. And what that ends up doing is that it means that we end up fighting against each other rather than valuing each other. So a couple of thoughts I have in how that manifests itself is, I think when you have white supremacy, the natural idea is how do I value myself, because white supremacy says I am of less value because I'm darker. And the natural thing is to love myself, to value myself, and that's needed. I think what I have learned is that the danger then becomes that I can become I fight white supremacy by highly identifying myself, if that makes sense. When I really believe that fighting against any supremacy is realizing that we're all shared humanity. And so I have looked at my story, our history as a country, and I'm very familiar of what's happened to black people in America. And it took me years to finally realize that What was the Asian American experience in the 1800s when people were fighting for their freedom as black people? And I realized that in my own view of history, I was missing a whole people group, a whole experience. And so for me, fighting against the idea of supremacy is welcoming also the shared history of others who are different than me. But I would say for most of us, we know our own experience with supremacy, and it causes us to highly focus on ourselves, as it might cause somebody else to focus on their whiteness. It causes us to focus on our own people group. And I really think the antidote to white supremacy is welcoming and seeing other people groups. When we don't see that antidote, we tend to only see our own pain, to see our own progress. And that means that we have to compete with others sometimes to make that progress too.
Yeah, that's insightful.
Yeah, and I would say that I've heard this analogy about white supremacy. And so, and the analogy was, if we're all different kinds of fish, so there's small fish, there's big fish, there's different colored fish swimming in the ocean, the water that we all breathe in is white supremacy. And so all of us are operating in this system and this environment in which white supremacy has been the dominant framework for which our laws have been created, our systems are created, the societies in which we live, at least in this country. But we don't recognize it because it's just everywhere. And it's unseen a lot of times, but it's in our biases. It's in the way that we relate to other people. It's ingrained in our, you know, communities, our schools, and our families. So actually calling that out and recognizing that is, I think, the first step to really repairing and building relationships within different communities of color. And I say that because the point that George was making that I want to echo is that I think there's been this dominant narrative in this country that communities of color have to be, or are oftentimes pitted against each other. And another outproduct of white supremacy is this mentality of scarcity rather than the mentality of abundance. And whenever we have a mentality of scarcity, we think that we have to push ourselves above other people, that when someone else benefits, that it means that we ourselves can't benefit. And this constant back and forth of the pie is only this small. And anytime someone takes a slice of the pie, it means less for me, rather than seeing the pie as something that can be expanded. Is a line of thinking that I think is very, very harmful. And so I think having a mentality of abundance, of acknowledging the environment of white supremacy as something that's oftentimes unseen, and naming it and addressing it, I think is a part of this reconciliation that we're talking about. I would say for the Asian American community, in particular the Korean American community, there is tension because so many Korean Americans, the first generation, so the immigrant generation, open up businesses in predominantly black communities. You see this in Baltimore City, you see this in Philadelphia. And I think the tension is a lot of times the perspective, which I wasn't really aware of growing up, is that, you know, you have a lot of kind of Korean immigrants that are opening up businesses in black communities, but they're not really serving those communities. And so there's this tension there. And especially if, you know, the store owner is a convenience store owner and they're like mindful of crime and all these things, there's like this narrative tied to a lot of immigrants trying to open up businesses and things like that. I would say in my own family, it wasn't that dynamic I was too aware of, because my dad, when he had opened his business in Center City, Philadelphia, a lot of his customers were black. And in fact, he was like really well respected and like had such a good relationship in the community that he was in. And so many of his customers were local because he was just a very good mechanic. And so that tension wasn't really there. But I know in the larger dynamic where a lot of my friends who are Korean, their parents were store owners, and there was this fear of working in the city because of crime, like that perpetuated within the Korean community and the broader Asian community, this anti-blackness that I think is still there. I think for a lot of the second generation immigrant community or Asian community, including myself, that there's this kind of a break, I think, because I think we're aware of that anti-blackness that has existed within our community and a desire to overcome that narrative by having conversations with, you know, older generation immigrants and others to talk about the anti-blackness that exists and how that actually plays out in cities across the United States. And so I think there is this awareness, I think especially with what has happened over this past year with Black Lives Matter and even recently with the anti-Asian violence, where I think we're seeing more of a solidarity built between common communities that are struggling against maybe common systems of oppression. And obviously it plays out differently with the Black community. It looks very different than it looks for the Asian community. And I would say that I think the struggle for freedom and justice that the Black community has been leading on has inevitably led to more freedom and justice for the Asian community. And there's a lot more we can talk about regarding that. But I want to make that linkage and say that I think, you know, we're seeing more solidarity built between communities. But obviously, there's a lot more work to do as well.
Which is why I think this conversation is so important, because in my own life, I have a number of Asian American friends who for years have spoken up, marched with, and stood with me in solidarity. And Jenny, I would include you as one of those people who I admire for the work you do. And I'm also aware of the anti-Black mindset sometimes that is toward the African-American community and Asian-American community. So I think this conversation is needed because there's experiences where we have these conversations personally with people we know and respect and love, but I don't think we have them enough publicly. And a way that we can come together and heal. And a lot of times we might have fears towards one another. And I personally don't know of many experiences that I have been around where there was hate towards the Asian American community, but I know that that is there. I know that there's probably moments when store owners aren't respected and are belittled and are called languages from Black people that they might be called from other people groups at the same time. And so it's important for us to have this public conversation so we can move toward a public healing that I actually think that the animosity sometimes between Asian American and African American communities goes so unspoken. And this is an opportunity I think is so needed, because I think it's a great opportunity for healing, to see one another in reconciliation.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add to that is I think part of the reconciliation process has to be born out of relationship and community building. And I would say for a lot of the kind of older generational immigrant population of Koreans or the broader Asian population, the only instance in which they interacted with the Black community was as customers or at like in that neighborhood. And I think that dynamic obviously has been changing with the second generation. But I think, I think relationship building is so important. And for us to actually get to know each other outside of that kind of environment is critically important. And so I would just say that the community building aspect of it is critical as we have these conversations.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. And I'll just share a little bit about, you know, my experience as well. The Asian American experience is very diverse. And, you know, Jenny Yang, she talked about how many Koreans, they have more of an urban experience and they're working in Black neighborhoods, and that's very common in many parts of the Asian American world, where, you know, they work in mechanic shops or deli shops, laundromats, things like that. So a lot of Asians are in that world. I grew up in a very suburban context, and it was a very sheltered, insular context where I almost never interacted with Black people ever, and I think there's a different kind of racism there, where we just view Black people, I'll just speak generally. It was common for many Asians to view Black people in a very distant, very stereotypical kind of way. And they just associate Black people with crime or with drugs or with poverty and things like that. And they, many of them, they might not even know anybody personally. And I think that's another kind of racism in the Asian American experience that some people go through. And I think that just echoes your point. It's so necessary for us to build relationships with people, because if we don't have relationships, then we're just informed by the media. You know, whatever rap songs tell us, whatever movies tell us, that's just what we believe about other people, right?
And I think that gets back to the analogy of the water. You know, if you think of the caste system of some way, and what is the lowest scale caste or rung on the scale, it would be Black people. And this system that's kind of been set up, and you know, again, in that book, the book Cast, I'm going to reference it because I thought it would give a great example. As long as I'm not at the lowest rung, right? And what I will share as a Black man is it's been just amazing to me, stunning, how I've gone around the world and experienced racism as a Black man. and it shows me just how the water is white supremacy. I've experienced discrimination as a black man in Africa. I remember being with my white peers and getting on the bus, and they only let, at this time, they only let white people get on first. And I'm going with my peers, and it's like, you can't get on. I'm like, I'm going with them. I'm with them. I'm American. No, you're not. And they were pushing me off the bus, you know? Wow. And I can give a lot of other examples from Latin American. And it reminds me, and this is a part of, I feel as a black man, my anguish at times. It's not just moments that happen in the media when we are all grieving. It's also a reminder for me of, I don't know if there's a place I can go, literally, without someone already prejudging my value of who I am just by looking at who I am. And so as we enter this conversation, part of, I know I'm bringing part of that, is that the danger, the aggression, the violence in some way too of white supremacy is that it is very, very pervasive and is very, very prevalent.
Yeah, and I mean, I think as an Asian American woman, there are prejudices and stereotypes that I have to battle with as well. And I think a lot of times I end up in predominantly white spaces in churches or at conferences, and there's almost this expectation of, okay, she's this, you know, relatively young Asian woman, and I wonder what she's going to say. And a lot of comments I get after that is, oh, you are so eloquent. And it makes me think, did they expect that I wouldn't be, or did they think that I was going to be misspoken? And so I think when you enter into these spaces, you almost have this higher expectation of yourself to almost prove that, like, you're beyond that stereotype or that, you know, judge me for who I am, not what you think about me or the stereotype. And so, I mean, I think for black men and for Asian women and for, you know, whatever your identity is, there are definitely prejudices associated with that identity in various communities of color. But I think the challenges are distinctive, as you were saying, in general.
Yeah, thank you. One thing that I believe, Jenny Yang, you mentioned earlier is that sometimes people try to pit black and Asian communities against one another so that they're fighting for the small piece of pie, right? Sometimes it definitely feels that we are against one another. And, you know, and one example is in the area of affirmative action. In the affirmative action, it's common for many universities, for example, to have an overrepresentation of Asians and an underrepresentation of blacks. And so that is why some Asian Americans, they are against affirmative action because they feel like it's taking spots away. They might use that sort of language. It's taking spots away from Asians in order to give them to blacks or to other communities. What should be the Christian's approach to that? What would you say to this topic of affirmative action?
Well, I think affirmative action is just like one narrow piece of the larger puzzle of like systemic like policies and like rectifications and reparations that I think need to happen. But I would say, I think for the Asian American community, unfortunately, there has been this narrative of a small sliver of Asian students that feel like they've been disenfranchised because they didn't get admitted to the schools that they wanted to go to. And they think it's, you know, reverse racism, and they've been filing lawsuits against Harvard and other schools. I would say, though, that I actually think that these students have been partnering with predominantly white organizations to lodge their claims. And so I actually think, to a certain degree, yes, they may feel that way, but I also feel like sometimes they're being used by this larger group, not to preference Asian Americans or to feel like it's an injustice against them, but to preference, you know, to continue white supremacy. And so, I mean, I think to speak to the larger point about like education and admissions in general, I would say this. I think, you know, a lot of Asian Americans feel like the value that we bring is our test scores and our achievements and what's on our paper. And I just want to push back against that, because when you look at the values that we bring as people, our histories, our stories, all of that is an important part of who we are. And I think our value and whether or not we can succeed in a school and, you know, the potential we have is not dictated by a test score. It's not dictated by these like lists of achievements that you have. I think a lot of that is a result of privilege and of opportunity, but I don't think that necessarily dictates potential. And so for a lot of institutes of higher education, I think they have that in mind. They don't have necessarily a framework that, okay, this is the only thing that's important. They look at their community and they say, how do we want to build this community? And how do we get a diversity of people who have different experiences, who have different backgrounds and identities and cultures that can really make the right mix to have them together to receive this education? And so, you know, this idea that, okay, certain schools have slotted admissions based on this, and look at me, I have a higher test score, look at me, I have this and that, without realizing the value in other aspects of a person's story, I think is something that I think needs to change and needs to be a part of that conversation. So I think that's probably the main thing I would say around, you know, affirmative action. And the second thing, though, that I would say is that I think as Asian Americans, we have to be very mindful of how we've often been pitted against the Black community by white people. You know, it's these perpetual narratives around, you know, if you don't get something, you know, look at them, or even in the media, there's this perpetuation of the Black, you know, this, the Black Asian kind of narrative. And I just think we have to take that back a little bit as the Asian community and realize that, you know, we should be in the struggle to make the whole society more just. And this is not just about our community. And whenever we see injustice all around, especially for those of us who are followers of Jesus, that is something that we need to speak out against, even if we think it's at cost to ourselves, right? And so, you know, we can speak as Asian Americans. We can also speak as followers of Jesus. And I think a lot of times those values have to be the dominant values in these conversations.
I don't know if I have a lot to add to that. Jenny really covered a lot of it. I would, you know, we've said white supremacy quite a bit. It's good to remember that every generation has had white people who don't fall into the narrative of white supremacy, who've always spoken up, who've always stood out. And I share that because the danger of white supremacy is really for everybody in the water. So at some point, if you were Irish, if you were Italian, you were not accepted here. But if you let go of your Irishness, maybe even your name, or your Italianness, and you embraced whiteness, then you could be accepted and pitted against what was not white, right? And so I want to just, and I think what is happening in, when it comes to this again is the same thing. It is, in part, you're not Black, right? But look at you, you have the grades, and we will accept you in this way, and let's push back against those who don't deserve it. And I would say it is a moment for us to define what is justice. It forgets our story as a country. It forgets the system that we're trying to really write. And it almost replicates that idea of if you just assimilate, you can assimilate, they can't. If you can assimilate and be against who can't, you can gain. And I think a lot of cultures, again, I would say Irish and Italian is too, have lost their culture at the risk of gaining the benefits of whiteness. And I feel like it's another temptation. The question for me in this isn't, do I get a spot or not get a spot? The question for me in this is, has our country become more just? Have people been treated with more equality? But if you think about what's been contended, it has nothing to do with that, right? If anything, if you look at the core of what's being accomplished, it is causing hate toward Black people again. And white supremacy has a really good way of doing that generation after generation. So I would just encourage my friends, my community from the Asian American community, if anything that we're being led to causes more hate towards anyone who is not white, that we would check our hearts and ask ourselves, is this in line with Jesus' heart, that it brings animosity and frustration and anger rather than seeing the dignity in another people group?
That's great. And maybe one way to frame it, just bouncing off of what you guys have said, is if you narrow in on a specific case of a school and one person who is Asian feeling like he or she didn't get into the school of his or her choice, maybe that case, as an isolated case, may seem unjust. But if you zoom out and you look at the whole country, the whole narrative, not having affirmative action would be even more unjust, right? Because there's a whole, you have to take into account all of this history and all of this all of this racism in our country. Let's move on to the next question. What are some ways, I feel like we've been hitting on this a little bit, but let's dive in a little more. What are some ways in which blacks and Asians can be learning from one another's cultures? How have you seen commonalities shared between both communities in solidarity? How can we be learning from one another? And how have we seen commonalities shared between both communities in solidarity?
I think the best way to learn with one another is to spend time and build relationships with one another, as Jenny mentioned. For a number of years, one of our pastors at our church, Yusin Kim, Korean-American, he taught me a lot that I did not see just because of our cultural differences, not just in the world, but even in the scriptures. And I'm a better man, a better pastor, a better father because of my relationship with him. I remember we took our staff to a church conference, and we looked for a local restaurant to eat at. And Pastor Yusin chose the Korean restaurant for us to eat at. And he introduced us. He pulled out this whole platter of Korean dishes for us to eat that we got to learn about and hear stories about. And that was a gain for us. But I think as we talk about building solidarity, it's breaking bread together. It's spending time together. It's appreciating hearing each other's stories. And as much as I've had an experience as a black man growing up in South Baltimore, my experience, even the hardships of what I know of our history, I find great interest in hearing Jenny's experience and her family. I don't know what it's like to jump into a country and you have parents who don't know the language in this country, who don't know the customs and they're adapting, and you're a child going to school and you know two different languages, and how do you hold your culture without assimilating? Like, is there something I can learn in your experience, in your journey, that I have not experienced, and vice versa? And I think when you have a place where you get to appreciate the unique experiences that our cultures have together and the unique traditions that our cultures bring to one another, then when you see pain, how can you stand aside when someone you deeply know, whose story you respect, whose journey you now also respect, how can you stand aside when they hurt? How can you not stand with them in the midst of that hurt?
Yeah, and I would say for me too that the friendships that I've developed and over the past many years with leaders in the Black church and others have really been formational for me as a mom and as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus. And I would say I think that there are so many common values between the Black community and the Asian American community that focus on, you know, family and church life and all of these things that I think we get to uncover when we're in relationship with each other. And I think in a lot of cities across the United States, you know, we're trying to build these relationships cross-culturally and trying to have these relationships form how we serve each other and how we build community around each other. I would say, especially in this past year where there was such kind of public grievances against the Black community, it really wakened up the Asian community to think that we cannot just be silent anymore, that we can't just let it be okay or feel like we're, by speaking up, we're causing trouble. Because I think a lot of our parents pushed us to not make trouble and to, you know, to stay in line and to be accepted. And I feel like for many of us, we felt like, no, that is not acceptable anymore, that we have to speak up, we have to show solidarity, that we have to show up to rallies and marches, and even say, you know, Black Lives Matter. And all of, and I think a part of that is acknowledging the pain and the struggle of the Black community and realizing the history of that over many, many, you know, hundreds of years in the United States. And so I think, you know, I think one of the things for the Asian community that we have to kind of overcome is just this sense of pursuing the American dream at the expense of other communities of color. And when that has been the goal for a lot of immigrants, sometimes that's all we focus on without realizing that the pursuit of justice is actually our greater calling, that even if it's not the American dream per se, that American dream per se, that the pursuit of God's kingdom here on earth can actually look very different than the American dream. And so I think George said it so well, that I think we have so much to learn from each other. And it's not just about the negative narrative, it's about the positive kind of contributions and things we can receive as gifts when we're in community with one another.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I definitely, when I was growing up in this country, my parents really instilled in me this value of pursuing the American dream. And I don't think I realized at the time, but now looking back, I think a lot of what's embedded in this idea of pursuing the American dream is to achieve or to blend into white society and to assimilate. We use that word, assimilate into white society. And as you said, sometimes at the expense of other people who are not assimilated into white society. And that was sort of embedded in that goal, even though we didn't say that out loud. I think functionally, when we, the way we apply to schools, the way we choose our careers, the way we do business, that's what it does. We make these decisions that subconsciously or subtly disenfranchise other communities that are not a part of the American dream. And I think that, yeah, that's just very important to recognize. And instead of, I think it's obviously it's great to pursue dreams and try to be successful, but also to keep in mind that one of our goals as Christians is to pursue justice as well and to have that healthy perspective. How can Asians be advocates for black and brown peoples when racism occurs? And vice versa, how can blacks be advocates for Asian peoples when racism occurs? And if there are maybe practical examples you can think of here, even in our immediate Baltimore context, it would be great to hear about that too. But how can we be advocates for one another?
Well, I'll start with a personal story because I think it helps capture kind of who I am. And so I, when I studied abroad in Madrid, Spain, I was riding the subway and there was a young African mother and her child and a bunch of Spanish teenagers came on the subway and they pulled out their spray cans and graffitied on the walls of the train, "Get out of my country, black people." And I saw that and I was immediately looked at this woman and I looked at the Spanish teenagers and I walked towards them because I was so mad. And then they got off, so I couldn't say anything, but I went up to this woman and I asked her in Spanish, like, "Are you okay?" And she really didn't want to talk. And like no one on that train, they all looked, but they didn't say anything. And what bothered me was that there was such a blatant instance of racism, but what bothered me even more was that no one said anything, that no one spoke up, that no one intervened, that they were literally bystanders watching racism unfold. And I think for me, as we think for our communities, but also for our white brothers and sisters, I think sometimes there's this complicity in that we merely are bystanders while injustice is unfolding around us, and we brush it off because we think it's funny, or we brush it off because we're like, "Oh, well, I've never seen that," or we brush it off because, "Oh, we have black friends," or, you know, we have, you know, black family members. But I think being aware of our own biases and us being within this system of white supremacy is so important. But at the same time, I think for many of us, we have to speak out. We have to, you know, march and protest and have a public display of who we are as a people. And I think it's public and private. I think we have to have private conversations with families and friends around, you know, what we're struggling with, what we can't overcome, our own biases and kind of our questions. But I think having a public display of solidarity is critically important. And so when there are marches and protests, you know, show up and stand up. And where there are, you know, even people kind of castigate social media saying, "Oh, that's not really activism." I actually think it's a core part of activism. It's a way to share messages and be discipled, I think, by information and truth in a way that I think is very helpful. So I would say that. I think the last thing I would say is that I think for the Asian American community that, or even like for the black community, that we're not in an oppression Olympics where, you know, your oppression is greater than mine or mine. I mean, yes, I think the black experience is distinctive, and there is absolutely no doubt that the injustices that the black and brown community to a certain degree have experienced are unique, and we need to be in that fight together. But I think, you know, for us to say like Asian Lives Matter and appropriate that hashtag, I think is problematic because I think, because that's some of what we've been seeing recently. So I think that's something that where we need to be mindful of. But I will say that when George and I were both speaking at the local Stop Asian Hate rally a few weeks ago, I remember when I showed up to that rally, you know, most of the people I saw were Asian, actually. And I was like, oh gosh, like, is this going to be an Asian a rally just for Asian people? And I felt vulnerable because I felt like, gosh, if no one else comes, that means that we only care about the issues that impact us. But when, you know, white people started showing up, and then our Black friends started showing up and others, it made me feel like I was less vulnerable because there was solidarity in numbers and in a public showing. And so I think, again, presence and proximity is an important part of this justice conversation. And I think that is something that we need to continue to do moving forward. That was long, sorry.
It's hard following up behind you.
No.
you know what, I would agree. I would add, when you mentioned proximity, it made me just think of Jesus teaching the parable of the Good Samaritan and how he intentionally placed a Samaritan in his response to who is my neighbor. And he put a Samaritan who this Jewish teacher of the law should not interact with at that time. And the one who was neighborly ended up being the one who was other, if that makes sense. And Jesus was basically saying it's not who you are close to or like, it's who you choose to draw close to and to share likeness with. And I think that is a lot of what you were touching on is how do we draw nearer to one another? How do we speak up for one another? How do we walk and march with each other? For me, when I think of the idea of white supremacy, that is in so many parts of our being and around us. I think the best way to fight against it in any injustice is for a multicultural effort, is when people see people from so many different backgrounds saying, this doesn't directly impact me, but I'm here. And I know that there's a young lady in Baltimore who was leading this amazing effort to kind of bring to the forefront the Asian American experience in Baltimore. And I learned a lot from her, Stephanie Sue. And she had once a year this event where people would come together in the city and celebrate the Asian American story that was often forgotten. And because of the pandemic, she hasn't done it in a while. But I remember just celebrating her and wishing I could be there to, like, appreciate it. But she told me this amazing history that I did not know of. And so I think another part of it is starting to learn each other's stories. She mentioned that it was in 1968, with the riots that happened in Baltimore after King was assassinated, that many of the Asian American community left Baltimore City. We have a shared history, and too often we miss each other in it. So I think learning our shared history is helpful as we draw near together. Speaking with one another and walking with one another, I think, are vital and important as we move forward.
Yeah. Baltimore used to have a Chinatown. I don't know if you knew.
That's what I learned.
Yeah.
It's very small. It's like one street. But it's there. It is there.
It still is there. Yeah,
it is there, yeah.
It used to be, you know, more than like two stores. But yeah, I think that's so true. I love what you said about the multicultural community coming together being one of the best ways to battle white supremacy. Because if it's just Black people caring about Black issues and Asian people caring about Asian issues, then what you have is people pitting, we're being pitted against one another, right? We're fighting, it's like a classic, you know, Remember the Titans sort of thing, where you just have people who are, they're identifying with their race and they're against another race. But when you have events where this is a Black Lives Matter event and non-Black people are showing up in support, and when you have maybe an anti-Asian racism rally and, you know, and non-Asians are showing up support, I think that destroys this segregationist kind of narrative where every race is out for himself, you know? So I love that. I want to also include some of our white brothers and sisters in this conversation as well, because, you know, I was talking to a white brother, you know, a month or so ago, and he was talking about how he doesn't know how to enter into spaces like this. He said that he wanted to be an advocate for his Black and Asian brothers and sisters, but he doesn't know what to do because sometimes he feels like he's not welcome. Sometimes there's this narrative, maybe like, oh, this is a non-white space, and we need to talk about our issues amongst ourselves. And sometimes he doesn't want to come off as a white savior, that sort of thing. So what would you say to someone in that boat, someone who is white, and maybe they recognize some of the issues that are going on but they don't know how to engage in these issues. What are some steps you would give to someone who is white?
Like how Jenny turned to me before I could turn to her. you know, I always start here. Find your heroes of the past. Because sometimes we think we're starting this work for the first time, and we're only continuing this work in our generation. And many times in every generation, especially people of faith, you have had white people who were a part of this work. It's always been a multicultural effort. I was just reading the other day about the Freedom Rides. It was a very diverse group of people getting on buses, black and white, getting beat up for freedom. So I would say find your heroes of the past. Elijah Lovejoy might be one. Thaddeus Stevens might be another. Our narrative that we are told that we all receive and the water that we drink, even what it means to be patriotic and American, often excludes the voices of the prophets who fought for racial justice and racial reconciliation. And they are diverse, but their voices are hidden. And so go find those heroes, and when you see how they live, they will give you courage to know what it looks like to live in this present moment. And then when you get into any place that you go into, I think you can treat everybody with dignity, and you speak when you need to. I remember when I went to that rally, I was just going to go there to stand, right? And then they were like, can you speak? Okay, I'll speak, you know. I don't have to speak, but in that moment, my presence hopefully communicates how much I value you. And if you welcome me to speak, then I do. And so it's all of us, but I'll say particularly for my white brother, be willing to just be present, to listen and to learn. And then if you're invited to ask to speak, then be able to do so. And I think that we will all, if we do this multiculturally, have spaces where we say, I don't have to say something. I don't have to answer anything. I can listen and I can learn, which I have learned is probably the greatest gift before we act and speak together is people who are more willing to realize I have something I need to hear first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just want to say that goes a long way. I'll just speak as an Asian. When a white person expresses an interest in learning about Asian culture, I mean, that it might not seem like anything, but I think that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I would echo as well, which is a posture of listening and learning is so important. And my question would be, who are you learning from? And are the books that you're reading, the people that you're listening to, only white, or are they black and Asian and Latino and Native American and, you know, Middle Eastern and others? I think there is this broad community of people whom we can learn from. And then the other thing I would say too is that I think as we enter into these conversations, not only is a posture of listening and learning so important, but also, you know, what is the role that you're playing in your sphere of influence to, you know, lead your family and to lead your church and to have these uncomfortable conversations? And my encouragement to you would be, it's okay to be uncomfortable, and it's okay to sit in the tension, and it's okay not to have the answers. I think anytime we want to push away from the discomfort and push away from the tension is a missed opportunity to learn and to be discipled. And so I think when we are uncomfortable, we have to ask the question, well, what is God trying to teach me in this moment about myself? And I think for many of us who grew up in the United States and was, you know, educated in a certain way, we think we have, you know, the ultimate truth, right? That our vision of the interpretation of the Bible and our theology, or I'm getting into deep waters here, but like that is the ultimate truth. And we limit the opportunity to learn from people that may have different experiences and that interpret, you know, theology and lived out discipleship in a very different way. And so lean into the discomfort. Even if you don't have answers, ask questions and be a learner on this journey, because I think it's when we push through the discomfort that I think we can really be transformed.
Yeah, that's awesome. And if you're white and you're tuning in, I just want to say, you know, we're really glad that you're here. And our hope is that when we have events like this, you know, where even if the title says black and Asian together, our hope is that there are other people who are not black and Asian who are tuning in and joining us and learning. And that, I think that's one of our goals. Just to clarify. So white supremacy is an issue, but all white people are not the issue. And so we don't want you to feel like you're an issue just because you're white. We welcome you and to be a part of this conversation. We're going to close in a few minutes, but maybe we'll just give you an opportunity. If there's anything else you want to say in regards to this conversation about anti-black racism, anti-Asian racism, working together, solidarity, if there's anything else you want to say, this would be your opportunity. So We can just give a few minutes. If there's anything you felt like has been missed out on this conversation, does anything come to mind?
Well, I would just say that I think as we enter more deeply into conversations around race and kind of reengage our consciousness around this, it's important to recognize that racism rears its ugly head in almost in every institution, right? So it rears its ugly head within the church. It rears its ugly head in our schools, in our education systems and housing. It's everywhere. And so I think for us, when sometimes we pigeon racism as like this side issue, when it's manifested in so many different ways. And so I think being mindful of that and making sure that we are aware of it, I think as we engage as a church on these broader issues, I think it's going to be really important. And I would also say, I think coming up, there are going to be, this conversation is not going away, and it's going to be ongoing. And anytime there are instances of police brutality or these things that just make us grieve, there's the importance of lament and of grieving, because anytime we don't grieve and lament when these instances happen, and they will unfortunately happen, it normalizes violence, and it normalizes, gun violence and police brutality as if they were normal, and they're not normal. That this is not how society should be operating. And so I think for us as a church to grieve and lament, even as we organize and march and protest, is going to be a core part of our journey. And so I just want to point that out as we talk about, the journey ahead.
I would just add some final thoughts. And Jenny, you have emphasized how white supremacy is all around us. And Larry, I really appreciate you. He said white supremacy and not white people. And that distinguishing that, what I find interesting is that in South Africa, when they kind of implemented their like apartheid policies, they actually had to displace communities to make sure they were segregated because it didn't exist before then. But it's interesting in America how it's been a part of our founding is that when slavery ended, black people just wanted black schools and black neighbors. There was no like, oh, we should be able to live there. Like there was already in us, not just black people, but our culture, our society, that we wouldn't live together. And that's just a part of like, I wonder sometimes as we have been born and as we've grown, as we've had the same water, there's so many things that seem normal to us that we don't realize is a part of what has always been. And how do we unlearn it, unpack that together and draw nearer to each other, acknowledging that this isn't how things are supposed to be. And so my last thought is having this beautiful hope that where we are is not where we have to be. And we can determine together how we move forward. And the greatest, I believe, push against the idea of white supremacy is celebrating and valuing what I call the divine dignity in every person and in every culture. And that would mean for me, don't shrink back. Don't anybody shrink back. And I would say to those of my friends in the Asian American community, I celebrate your culture. Don't shrink back. Don't assimilate. Like, be fully present. Draw near. We have something to learn from you. We want to learn from you. And we have something that we want to share with you, too. And so let's find a way forward together that we haven't seen in our country in a long time.
That's awesome. I'll confess, as an Asian, sometimes we are very fatalistic in our approach to racism. We just say, this is just racism is normal, and this is all that is and all that will ever be, and we just have to deal with it. We have to accept it, and we just make do with what we have. And that's often a lot of our mentality, but I love just this hopefulness that we have that if the gospel is true, and if the kingdom of God is here and now, then that means there is hope, and there is the possibility of change and justice and reconciliation and unity and all that. So if you are a Christian, hold on to that hope. Well, thank you so much to our panelists, Jenny Yang and George Hopkins, for being here. This was an awesome conversation. I learned a lot. I got a lot out of it, and I hope you all did as well. I do encourage you to not let this conversation end here. Continue to have these conversations on your own. Find people who are different from you. Find people who have a different ethnic background than you, and have a learner's posture, and try to be engaged in these conversations and protest, learn, be educated, talk, persuade, do all that is necessary so that we can live out the kingdom of God here on earth. Thank you very much. Hope you have a great day. Take care.